This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
The Attorney General faces off today against the Senate, Democrats grandstand, and the president goes after the Firefighters Union. And by the way, Philadelphia now has a male cheerleader. The Eagles have a male cheerleader. Welcome back to the show. Glad you are here. The Zioli Show on Twitter at Rich Zioli, 855-839-1210. Hey, Joe, didn't I tell you to keep the music going until I gave the phone number out?
It was going until you gave the phone number out.
I didn't hear the music. Did you hear the music? Where was the music?
It was there, Rich.
How did I not hear the music?
I don't know.
Dawn, did you hear the music?
I did not hear the music.
Okay, so you heard the music in your head, Joe?
Joe, are you singing to yourself again?
No, I was not singing to myself
again. Were you singing some 1940s show tune in your head, Joe? Is that what it was?
No, it was from the 50s, Rich.
No.
You keep the intro rolling until I give the number. It's not that hard. What's so hard about that?
It's not that hard. It's when to know, hey, here's the number. Rat-a-tat-tat, bring it down.
Ready? When I give a phone number.
But I don't know what it's going to come.
I'm not speaking in Farsi or Mandarin Chinese. It's a phone number. It's numbers, man.
I'm sorry, Richard.
855. Do you know the number? What's the number of our station, Joe?
855.
Right. So when you hear me say that, that's after I say that and get to the end, then you stop the music, okay?
Oh. So once the area code is written. Oh, now I understand.
Area code. What the hell is with this kid?
855.
What is with him? What area code is 855, Joe?
That's for the
radio
station.
You have a rotary phone at your mom's basement, don't you?
Well, I mean, it works well. The dial still spins.
I remember the day Don Joe got a party line at his house. He was so happy. His parents got him a party line. They were like, yeah, go ahead, Joe. You're a big guy now. All right, well, listen, we'll try that again at the 6 o'clock hour, okay?
Let's hope I get
we're
it gonna right.
We're going to give you another shot at this, all right?
See, this is just proof Entercom is an equal opportunity employer.
Wow.
This is a dog.
I know.
Boom. I love it. Drops the hammer. 855-839-1210, as you've heard, is the number. So please feel free to call and weigh in. Now, Joe has been cutting the audio of Cory Booker. God only knows if he actually got it or not. But hopefully at some point we'll have it and I'll play that for you. At the heart of this today is the notion by Democrats of whether or not the Attorney General is covering up for the President of the United States. Now, you have to believe two things if you believe that. Number one is that Mueller's report actually has something in there that is the secret that brings down the president. But it's coded. You know, it's the first letter of every word in the third paragraph. You add them all together, it spells impeachment or something. Or the old Captain Crunch decoder where you look inside the cereal box, you get your prize, and you decode the things. Otherwise, if you just look at the Mueller report the way it is, you just go, well, okay, there's no collusion. Part one, part two, obstruction. There's no obstruction because he didn't fire Mueller. Mueller was allowed to finish his investigation. But they don't like the fact that the spirit of the Mueller report was not respected enough. The spirit which says that the president obstructed justice. The Mueller report did not say the president should be indicted. The Mueller report did not recommend an indictment, did not recommend the grand jury. The Mueller report did not recommend impeachment. Now, they could have got a sealed indictment against the president and then held it till he left office. Can't indict a sitting president, but you can certainly have a sealed indictment against him that you can use afterward. He didn't do that. He didn't recommend to Congress, listen, I've done my review. I've done my conclusion. You got to impeach this guy for obstruction of justice. He could have done that. He didn't do that. Instead, he makes a report. Bill Barr releases that report. The president releases that report. And everybody's mad because Mueller drops a bombshell letter last night. Mueller's team to the Washington Post. And in that letter, they say, well, you're misinterpreting what I meant. No, that's not what the letter says. The letter says very, very sadly, basically this. We're so mad you gave everybody the fact that he didn't commit a crime because in our hearts, we know that he wanted to. And for that, you should have let everybody feel that way. It doesn't make any logical sense. But that's literally what they're trying to say here. We know that he didn't commit a crime, but the fact that he wanted to means you should have presented this report to the American people and the Congress with that being the guiding light. That had it only been for brave Don McGahn, the president would have obstructed justice, or had it only been for this or that. And that should have been what you led with. It should have been that. That tenor, that tone. Forget the substance of the report. It should have been that. Now, the attorney general did very well today in a very hostile crowd, with some people being more hostile than others. And we'll play you some of that, too. But I think the point here that needs to be understood in terms of what the Democrats are going for, they're going for this idea that now the attorney general of the United States is he's got to go because he's not impartial. What attorney general is supposed to be impartial to the president when he's in the president's cabinet, when he's appointed by the president, when he's there to help the president do his job of being the president and to serve justice? And what president at that moment is supposed to be impartial? I'm curious about that fact. Now, the president hasn't committed a crime, so the attorney general doesn't have to cover it up because there was no crime to cover up. I mean, you can make an argument that, well, if the attorney general is covering up a crime, well, okay, maybe we could have that chat, but that's not what's being alluded here to, right? Because we know there's no collusion. So since there's no collusion, they got to turn to obstruction. Then they say the president obstructed justice. Well, how? Well, he wanted to fire Mueller, but he didn't. But he wanted to. Now, the attorney general explained this today. He explained why it's not obstruction of justice. Joe, do you have that cut that Greg sent you that from a few moments ago?
Yes, I do.
Okay, wonderful. This is the attorney general today answering a question from Dianne Feinstein of California about why it's not obstruction.
The absence of an underlying crime doesn't necessarily mean that there would be other motives for obstruction, although it gets a little bit harder to prove and more speculative as to what those motives might be. But the point I was trying to make earlier is that in the situation of the president, who has constitutional authority to supervise proceedings, if in fact a proceeding was not well-founded, if it was a groundless proceeding, if it was based on false allegations, the president does not have to sit there constitutionally and allow it to run its course.
Bingo.
The president could terminate that proceeding, and it would not be a corrupt intent because he was being falsely accused, and he would be worried about the impact on his administration. That's important because most of the obstruction claims that are being made here or episodes do involve the exercise of the president's constitutional authority, and we now know that he was being falsely accused.
I can't tell you how right the attorney general is on that point. Think about this now. If you could just cripple an administration, because the executive branch is one guy, think of the treason you could get away with by just launching phony investigations, investigation after investigation. And the president, from the perspective of the executive branch of government, has an obligation. Is the executive branch able to function in light of this? Now, he concluded it was with the Mueller report. It was. He could do his job, and the executive branch could function. What if it couldn't? And the president had to shut that down because a rogue attorney general or a rogue U.S. attorney or a rogue whoever was going after the administration. But that didn't happen, right? President let the Mueller report go on. What the president can't do is shut down a congressional investigation. But Mueller didn't work for Congress. Mueller is part of the executive branch of government, the branch that the president is in charge of. The president is the executive branch of government. That's an important point, too, to understand. Congress can absolutely, if they want to, hire their own investigator. Go for it and start your impeachment proceedings and knock yourself out. But that's not what happened here, and the president can't do anything about that. But that didn't happen here, did it? So they throw up these hypotheticals about, well, can't you obstruct justice even if there's no crime that's been committed? And isn't wanting to shut down an investigation evidence of obstruction? No. No, it's not. What happens if what happens if you have a baseless investigation, which this was, and that baseless investigation becomes so consuming that the presidency literally now cannot function? And the president knows it's baseless because he was there. He has an obligation to do something about it. So he fires a special counsel, fires the attorney general, whoever. Congress has a remedy there. The remedy is impeachment. It's in the Constitution. Again, I always say this. If you just follow the playbook, you don't get in trouble. If you just follow the Fourth Amendment and you don't give exceptions for this and that, you don't get in trouble. If you just follow the Constitution, you don't get in trouble. This is how it works. We see too often, though, the abuse of this liberty, and then we wake up and go, how did we get here? You didn't get here overnight. Got here over decades in the making. But now the question becomes, who and high up were they in government that allowed this to go on? And what role did the dossier play in all this? What role did the Steele dossier play? Who ordered it? Who organized it? Who was behind it? Also, I'd like to know this too. The CIA. What about the CIA? The ones that were pushing the dossier, even though there were intelligence officials who said that they did not believe the claims of the dossier. Now, all day today, I've heard people on MSNBC trashing Lindsey Graham. They used to love Lindsey Graham. Now they hate Lindsey Graham. He's a big Trump apologist. Lindsey Graham is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And today he spoke. He gave his opinion. Cut 7.
1 second. It's a computer issue.
Okay. All right. Joe, put your little games away. And
it's here.
We're going to, in a bipartisan way, I hope, deal with Russia. But when the Mueller report is put to bed, and it soon
stop it for
be.
A second, Joe. I need to start this over. Joe was playing that motivational, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me. Since Dawn Zinger before.
He couldn't take being made fun of.
By Dawn, of all people.
No.
Boom. Stensland dropped the hammer of Thor on him. It was fantastic.
He's over there playing, I think, are you on Discord or something? He's like doing the dance.
Are you doing Fortnite? Is that what you're
Fortnite,
doing, Joe?
Fortnite, Discord.
He's like, 1 second, hang on, I gotta open a new browser.
Fortnite?
Hang on.
I don't even know
hang
what that on. Is. That sounds old.
Dawn dropped the hammer before on Joe. It was fantastic.
It was.
Are you ready now, Joe?
I'm ready when you are, Rich. Okay. I'm always ready for you.
Thank you. This is Chairman Lindsey Graham.
We're going to, in a bipartisan way, I hope, deal with Russia. But when the Mueller report is put to bed, and it soon will be, this committee is going to look long and hard at how this all started. We're going to look at the FISA warrant process. Did Russia provide Christopher Steele the information about Trump that turned out to be garbage that was used to get a warrant on an American citizen? And if so, how did the system fail? Was there a real effort between Papadopoulos and anybody in Russia to use the Clinton emails stole by the Russians, or was that thought planted in his mind? I don't know, but we're going to look. And I can tell you this, if you change the names, y'all would want to look too. Everything I just said, just substitute Clinton for Trump. See what all these people with cameras would be saying out here about this.
It's a great point that the chairman makes, and we're going to get to the bottom of this, and we should get to the bottom of this. It's important to get to the bottom of this. You have to. Now, Senator Mike Lee, who's one of the smartest guys in the Senate, by the way, And he's a guy who calls it like he sees it. Look, he voted against the president's national emergency declaration on the border. Mike Lee does what Mike Lee thinks is right, which I respect, and I will always respect that. He is a constitutionalist. He is a fearless, God-fearing man. So he's not totally fearless because he fears God. But he's fearless when it comes to these political games that are played on Capitol Hill. Cut 10.
In his classic dissent in Morrison v. Olson, Justice Scalia remarked that nothing is so politically effective as the ability to charge that one's opponent and his associates are not merely wrongheaded, naive, and ineffective, but in all probability, crooks. And nothing so effectively gives an appearance of validity to such charges as a Justice Department investigation. That observation has, I think, been borne out time and time again over the past 2 years. Time and time again, the president's political adversaries have exploited the Mueller probe, its mere existence, to spread baseless innuendo in an effort to undermine the legitimacy of the 2016 election and the effectiveness of this administration. For example, on January 25th, 2019, Speaker Nancy Pelosi asked, what does Putin have on the president politically, personally, or financially? Mr. Attorney General, is there any evidence that suggests that Vladimir Putin, quote unquote, has something on President Trump?
None that I'm aware of.
On February 20th, 2019, former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe said on national television to the entire nation that he thinks it's possible that Donald Trump is a Russian agent. Mr. Attorney General, is there any evidence that you're aware of that suggests even remotely that President Trump is a Russian agent?
None that I'm aware of.
All right. Well, we got a lot more to discuss, and I want to get your opinion on this as well. Of course, weigh in what you think of the hearing today, 855-839-1210. We're live today from Citizens Bank Park. Phillies getting ready to take on Detroit tonight. Players are out there warming up. It's going to be a good night for a ball game. Come on down and see us. Now, Pat Leahy is a senator who's been there for, I think, since the founding of the Republic. He was also in a couple of Batman movies. He should have stayed in those movies because he doesn't make a lot of sense. Today, he confronted the attorney general on whether or not Trump cooperated with the investigation, the Mueller investigation. So this is Senator Pat Leahy of Vermont, the other Vermont senator. Vermont is represented by two very old white guys, Bernie Sanders and Pat Leahy. Cut 12.
I'm not asking you whether that's obstruction. Is that fully cooperating?
Yeah, he fully cooperated.
So by instructing a former aide to tell the attorney general to unrecuse himself, shut down
actually,
the investigation.
Actually, he sounds like a Batman villain is what he sounds like.
And declare the president did nothing wrong, that's fully cooperating.
Where is that in the report?
That is on volume 2, page 5. On June 19, 2017, the president dictated a message for Lewandowski to deliver to Sessions. The message said the Sessions should publicly announce the notwithstanding his recusal from the Russian investigation.
What the hell? Can we have
the
term limits, please?
The investigation is very unfair to the president. The president
but you only
served
40
wrong.
Years.
Right. Okay, so... Cooperating. Well, firstly, asking
how do you only serve one centennial?
Himself,
it can't be a senator for two centennials. It can't be bicentennial. Too much.
Cooperating.
Well, I don't know if that declares the president did nothing wrong, although the president, in terms of collusion, did nothing wrong. Isn't that correct?
Well, collusion is not a crime. It's the obstructing. But
well,
is
now
that
collusion's fully cooperating? Not a crime. Okay, thank you, Senator Leahy. Now collusion's not a crime. So what the hell were we investigating all these years?
I don't
years?
See any conflict between that and fully cooperating with the investigation.
The president, of course, declared many times publicly in tweets and at campaign rallies
like Rendell,
and all that he would
he?
Testify. Fully, but he never did testify, correct?
As far as I know.
Well, I think you know whether he testified or
as
not.
As far as I know.
Well, you
he
know
didn't
too,
testify.
Genius. So now collusion's not a crime because the president didn't collude. Get it? See how that works? See how they change the move the goalposts, as they say? For years now, we spent $25 million in nonstop investigations to prove collusion, and now there's no collusion, so, collusion's not a crime.
Well, collusion's not a crime. Collusion's not a crime.
Ed Rendell's on the phone. He says he sounds 100% better than that.
You're right. I apologize to Governor Rendell. That was rude of me. It was very rude. He sounds like Boris, what's his name? Bela Lugosi, what he sounds like. Do you think Pelosi keeps him alive, too?
Yes.
Same transfusions that they share?
It's a sin.
Collusion's not a crime.
Well, collusion's not a crime. It's
so what the hell were you investigating then, genius? For 17 million years. You know, Dawn, do you ever remember that time that Pat Leahy got in a fight with Thomas Jefferson? two blocks away from our studio? Vicious fight.
They're all like Cersei's elderly advisors in Game of Thrones.
by the way, we got, three episodes of Game of Thrones left, right?
I know.
It's getting tense.
Wonderful.
It's getting tense. By the way, Pat Leahy is a White Walker. Senator Leahy is a White Walker for sure. Part of the dead, the army of the dead. Speaking of the other old white guy that represents Vermont, Bernie Sanders, going after the other white guy running for president, Joe Biden. So the old white guy club, the Democrat, don't you love the diversity of the Democrat Party, by the way? As they're always going on about how this person's a racist and that person's a racist. They're all a bunch of old white guys. But to me, it's just delicious how it is. Trump's a racist. This guy's a racist. That's a racist. So this is now old white guy Bernie Sanders going after old white guy Joe Biden, really eclipsing, encapsulating the diversity of today's modern Democratic Party. Cut 14.
Well, look, I'm running against, I think, 19 other people, so I'm concerned about everybody. But I think when people take a look at my record versus Vice President Biden's record. I helped lead the fight against NAFTA. He voted for NAFTA. I helped lead the fight against PNCR with China. He voted for it. I strongly opposed the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He supported it. I voted against the war in Iraq. He voted for it. So I think what I hope, Anderson, what this campaign is about, and I got to tell you, I like Joe Biden. Joe is a friend of mine.
Oh, yes.
But I think like what we need to do with all of the candidates, have a issue-oriented campaign, not personal attacks, but talk about what we have done in our political lives, what we want to do as president, and how we're going to transform our economy so that it works for all of us and not just the 1%.
The 1%. So there he is going after his good friend, Joe Biden. All right, now we have from New Jersey, the other guy running for president. He's not an old white guy. He's just a giant grandstander, Cory Booker. Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey, who I call him Count Grandstangela, Spartacus Booker and the Tears of Rage Band. He's smarter than this, and he's better than this, by the way. This is not the real Cory Booker. This is an act. And if you ever knew the real Cory Booker years ago, or maybe that was an act, I don't know, it's hard to say. Who knows? But certainly the Cory Booker that we all knew back in the day when he was running for mayor of Newark was not this guy. It's just amazing. Because I supported him for mayor of Newark. Everybody did back then. He was taking on Sharp James, who was corrupt. Cory Booker was talking about school choice and cutting government and cutting taxes. And this is not the same Cory Booker. I will tell you that. And listen, if you heard my interview with Chris Christie, Governor Christie that night, said the exact same thing. This is a totally different guy now. So Count Grandstangela, with his confrontation of the attorney general, take a listen.
Mr. Barr, as I take a step back at this, I just really think we're at a very sobering moment in American history. So true. That there is,
you know what? I'll tell you what,
considerable
Here's the deal.
Amount going on.
Let's undo the sobering moment. Come to our wine event on Saturday.
That
you're right.
Shows
this
sort of
moment. Hang on, Joe. Stop it for a quick second because this is important. The senator's right. This is a sobering moment in American history. Undo it by joining us at Cooper River Park on Saturday. We'll all drink wine. We'll unsober America. Okay. All right, Booker. All right, keep going.
There is a considerable amount going on when you actually take time and read this whole report that shows that we're sort of at a crossroad, and I fear that we're descending into a new normal that is dangerous for our democracy on a number of levels. And I fear, unfortunately, I hope we have a chance to discuss this, that you've not only put your own credibility into question, but seem to be giving sanction to behavior through the language you used in that press conference you held, the language you used in your summary that stimulated Mueller to write such a strong rebuking letter. I fear that you are adding normalcy to a point where we should be sounding alarms as opposed to saying that there's nothing to see here. And so one, this 448-page report that has a deep litany of lies and deceit and misconduct of
like
President
you,
United States
your whole life is a lie and a deceit
to lie and be deceitful, evidence of people trying to cover up behavior that on its face is morally wrong, whatever the legal standard is.
Morally wrong. Is it legally wrong? No, it's morally wrong.
Obstructive
okay.
conduct was acceptable, not only acceptable, but your sentence literally saying that the American people should be grateful for it, that is the beginning of normalization that I want to explore. But the second thing and we'll explore this, but I want to make my two statements at the top. One, that's problematic. And General, the second problem I have is that you seem to be excusing a campaign that
president?
Literally had hundreds of contacts with a foreign adversary. That I think there's a conclusion amongst, and a bipartisan conclusion, that there was a failure to even report those contacts, that we engaged in behaviors that the folks knew that were wrong, that they tried to actively hide. They seem to seek to capitalize on this foreign interference.
The foreign interference, right?
I mean,
don't
in
know
our
exactly
country,
what
we
the,
know
what the foreign interference was,
for
but
a campaign
that's okay.
And wrong for a campaign to share polling data with an American super PAC. But we have here documented a level of coordination with a foreign adversary sharing polling data.
Didn't the other guy just say collusion is not a crime?
And we seem to be and your conduct seems to be trying to normalize that behavior. And that's why I think we are in such a serious moment.
Give us a cliche.
That is eroding the cultures of this democracy and the security of this democracy. And so let's just get into some of this specifically.
Yeah, let's get into it.
You said, quote, "We know that the Russian operatives who perpetrated these schemes did not have the cooperation of President Trump or the Trump campaign."
Exactly.
"That is something that all Americans can and should be grateful to have confirmed."
Yes, our president didn't
collude with
Russia.
The things I just mentioned. A willingness to meet with Russian operatives in order to capitalize on information. I don't think that's something that should be grateful. I find your choice of words alarming. I think it calls into question your objectivity when you look at the actual context of the report. And so should the American people really be grateful that a candidate for president sought to benefit from material and information that was stolen by a foreign power in an effort to influence?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by seek to benefit. There's no indication that they engaged in either the conspiracy to hack or that they engaged in any action with respect to the dissemination that was criminal.
Well, again, sir, you're using the word conspiracy, which is a legal term. In that press conference, you used President Trump's words, obstruction, over and over again.
Obstruction's a legal term.
Well, sir, you pulled into his words, and I'm asking you specifically.
It's just painful. All right, let's take a break from this. Thank you for indulging. See, this is what I mean in terms of the grandstanding that happens. And you can thank the 17th Amendment for this. You know, Booker is trying to make this point. I don't know what the hell is. I actually don't even know what his point is. I have no idea what his point is. It's absolutely painful. And imagine how Barr feels listening. You listen to that for a minute and 30 seconds. Imagine how Barr feels listening to that. You know, here's the Attorney General, the smart guy, distinguished guy. He's got to listen to this nonsense day in and day out. And one after another, that is, you cooperate, collusion's not a crime, one after another. And nobody, and I mean nobody, on that committee was able to offer a single substantive point about the president committing obstruction of justice. Not one. And they don't have a point to make, so they just start grandstanding, and then they just wind up just being breathless. And I mean, by the time you get to the question, the guy goes, I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. What are you talking about? It was that over and over and over again, like on High Test. Andrew C. McCarthy at National Review put it very, very well when he said, parsed carefully, which is what you have to do with the special counsel's work, Mueller and his letter is precisely not saying that the attorney general misrepresented his key findings. He is saying that he and the Clinton Obama minions he recruited to staff the case wrote the report with a certain mood music in mind. To their chagrin, Barr gave us just the no crime bottom line. Mueller would have preferred for us to feel all the ooze of unpresidential escapades he couldn't indict, but wouldn't, from his lofty perch, exonerate. So you see what I mean? This is what I mean. At no point does Robert Mueller say the president should be indicted. At no point does Robert Mueller say the president should be impeached. But it's in the subtext of the thinking and the invisible ink and the mood ring, the cereal box mood ring that you got to get, the cereal box decoder. If you have your little Cap'n Crunch decoder, you can see it in there. But the problem is that's not what's in there. So Barr's focused on actually what's in there, and that's why they're upset. They're upset because, well, yeah, but read between the lines, man. We think the guy should be impeached for obstruction. Okay, well, we don't read between the lines in a report from a special counsel that costs $25 million. Not how it works. You can read between the lines in a love letter. You can read between the lines in a Shakespearean sonnet. You can read between the lines in Avengers Endgame, in terms of which movie is going to be made next. All those things are valid points. Not in the attorney general's report. Not in the special counsel's report. You don't read between the lines. Not in justice. Not in our criminal justice system, not in any system. You don't read between the lines. State it, fact. President should be indicted. President should be impeached. If that's not there, that means he shouldn't. If you feel very strongly like, for whatever reason, you lack the ability to reach that conclusion, that means then there is no standard for you to reach that conclusion, which means what? There's not enough evidence. It'd be like this. You see a district attorney who decides not to bring charges against somebody, but we all know they did it, but he doesn't bring charges against them. Why? Because they don't have enough evidence and it wouldn't hold up in court. So they go, yeah, but we know he did it. Yeah, well, tough. That's not how it works. On this case, beyond even not having any evidence, they don't have any motivation, they don't have any motive, they have all kinds of other things. They've got a lot of problems here. But again, they go, yeah, but we know he did it. Did what? Hey, obstructed justice. Well, then why didn't you say that? Well, no, really, why didn't you say it in your report? Well, it's silly, it really is. It's sophomoric, but that's what they're upset about. That's what they're upset about. 855-839-1210. John is in Huntington Valley. John, how are you?
I was going to make a point about the presidential office from, actually, Bush 43 on getting too much power. But I got to tell you, you're a lapdog and traitorous for how you portray things. Yes, traitorous. You know what?
Is that even a word?
Barr is misrepresenting. And I'm not saying as a Democrat. I'm saying as an independent. Please, be an American, not just a lapdog, a Trump person.
Hang on. Listen, excuse me, John. I'm trying to find out the word traitorous.
Now, you know what? You're not worth even talking to.
I want to be able to have a conversation with you. I'm just trying to read the word traitorous. A traitorist is a terrorist that is of American birth. This is according to UrbanDictionary.com. I don't believe traitorist is an actual word, which is hence why it's in Urban Dictionary. So John, who hung up, he's calling me a terrorist that is of American birth, or an American who turns against his own country and carries out terrorist acts. You know, listen, when you start a conversation that way, by calling someone a terrorist, it tends to not go well, again, with civility and all and whatnot, and purple and no labels and all that other nonsense. Traitorist, also, by the way, my cover band, my Steely Dan cover band in college was Traitorist. I don't know if you know that or not. Why would I have a Steely Dan cover band? Why does it even make any sense? Why did I think of that? Why did that band come to my mind right now? I have no idea. See the things that go in my mind, Dawn. See, it's not easy.
Well, but, you know, lapdogs are very cute and cuddly.
Well, that's a good puppy. Point. Thank you. He did call me a lapdog, which is very sweet.
Yeah, sweet little puppy.
Sweet puppy.
By the way, Asia by Steely Dan is one of the best albums ever made. So it was good. It was a good, solid effort. Yeah.
We are traitorous. And the lapdogs. Traitorous and the lapdogs. Yeah, ooh, actually, that's a hell of a band name, is it not?
Yeah.
We are traitorous and the lapdogs.
I was a member of the lapdogs, and then I had to, you know, and then I joined.
When the band broke up and became Pearl Jam, I was very disappointed back then when that happened.
Yeah.
By the way, we're live today at Citizens Bank Park, and the Phillies are taking on the Detroit lapdogs tonight.
Very tough team, the Detroit lapdogs.
Very tough team, the Detroit lapdogs. And yeah, there you go. So we'll chat about that a little bit as well. 855-839-1210. Let's see. Marshall is in Delaware. Marshall, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Very well.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I really think that was, I mean, professionalism is gone in politics anyway, but it was pretty obvious that there's three people you mentioned, and then Harina, they're just grandstanding. The whole strategy was, we'll grandstand and filibuster and not give him a time to answer until our time's expired, and then just move on and ask no real questions. But the thing that I picked up on, I'm sure you did too, because like you were saying, you were going to talk about the IG report and everything. So when he started getting pressed on that, and he confirmed there's a bunch of investigations going on, they broke and went for lunch or whatever. And then when they came back in unison, you know, Booker, Harris, and Harino instantly start questioning his credibility and whether he could recuse himself. And it's like, it's just the sloppiest political theater I've seen since the Kavanaugh thing. I mean, the Democrats used to be like decent politicians, not good people, but like good at being politicians. They're not even good at that anymore. And it's just embarrassing to watch. And I'm short on time, so I'll get your thoughts on that all fair, because I mean, it was just so obvious that now they're going to try to say he has to recuse himself, so he can't, you know, do anything with the IG report. And, I'll take your traitorous lapdog answer off air. Thanks.
Thank you, Marshall. Well, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of, and look, there. I think there was a time actually when you had Democrats who were very good people, and they really did want to try to do good for America. I always hear people say that there was this time when Reagan could talk to the Democrats and everything like this. Barry Goldwater, God rest his soul, wrote a book called Conscience of a Conservative. Jeff Flake ripped off the title and wrote a book called Conscience of the Conservative, but Barry Goldwater actually wrote it. You know, Barry Goldwater was against having cameras in the Senate. because of the grandstanding. He knew it would happen. Barry Goldwater was also a guy who believed that we never should have passed the 17th Amendment to the Constitution because that made the Senate a place of grandstanders and no longer a part of the government that represents the states, the part of the Congress that represents the states. And after that, everything went out the window. So was there a time when there were good people and they wanted to work across the aisle and all that? I don't know. Maybe. I can't remember it. I don't know. What I see when I turn on the television, when I watch these things, is I see children. I really do. I see a bunch of kids. And the problem is the 17th Amendment. The second problem is the fact that this is all theater. It's on TV. It's theater. It's absurd theater. It's beyond anything that – but look, still better than how they do it in England because the parliament there, I don't know if you ever see those, when they all stand up and yell at the prime minister and sit down. I mean, at least like we got a little bit more class than that, but not much. But not much. But the point that he made, the caller made, Marshall, which is an excellent point, is that what this is really about is having Barr recuse himself, having Rod Rosenstein stay on, and then they want the Inspector General's report to be buried. The Inspector General's report is going to expose how this all began, how this all started. How did this all begin? Was it the Steele dossier? Was it George Papadopoulos in a bar? Was it just a couple rogue FBI agents? Was it James Clapper? Was it John Brennan? Was it Barack Obama? How did this begin? How do we get to a place now where we're discussing the fact that the president, in my mind, absolutely did not commit obstruction to cover up a crime he did not commit, collusion? How did we get to this place? What led the Department of Justice, the National Security Administration, what led them down this road of spying on a president? What led them? How do we get here? And this is the question that I think has to be, as Democrats are doing the little circus of you got to recuse yourself, you got to step down, Republicans keep asking the same question, and it's a good question. How did this begin? What was the part of, what was the impetus of this? How did this start? And that's what the Inspector General is supposed to figure out. And I think the fact is that Bill Barr, who came from the swamp and now he's back, he's going to let it go forward. But I think there's a lot of people under him that want this covered up because it's like any other institution that does bad things. When any other institution does bad things, they want to cover up for the other people in the institution. And in particular, when the federal government's law enforcement division and the federal government's national security division did bad things, they certainly want to cover up for each other. You know, how you always hear it's like the they always say with cops, the thin blue line, you know. Imagine the federal line here, the swamp line. You know, the thin blue line is a myth. I mean, it's not true. The swamp line, the bureaucracy line of making sure that they all cover up for themselves, if they did it, they certainly want it to be covered up, right? I mean, if a corrupt cop on the local level did something, he wants it covered up. If a corrupt cop on the federal level did it, he wants it to be covered up. And so what Barr is trying to expose here is the heart of this, which is going to name names. And you're going to have names of FBI agents. You're going to have names of Department of Justice lawyers and officials. You're going to have names of possibly people in the White House under President Obama. You're going to have names of people at the CIA. You're going to have names of people at the NSA. And those names, as they come out, you notice how Democrats don't want any of that to come out, how they're rushing to keep that. Instead of being about transparency, right? Like, well, we got to get to the bottom of this. We got to make sure this. Nope. No, they are doing everything they can to keep those names from coming out. So instead of all of us having a right as Americans to figure out, hey, who are the corrupt cops here in this whole little dirty plot? They want it to be buried. And the people whose names would come out especially want it to be buried. So they're raiding the evidence locker right now, trying to get rid of everything. And Bill Barr's got the keys to the evidence locker. And if they can get him to recuse himself or step down or be impeached or whatever else, then they can maybe seize the reins of that and the cover-up can continue. And that's exactly what's happening here. All right, so obviously a big day today with the Attorney General in front of the Senate and a lot of nonsense the Democrats are spewing today. Utter, utter nonsense. And, you know, I think the big takeaway from this is that Democrats want to say the president obstructed justice, and Republicans are asking a very wise question, which is, how did all of this begin? How did this begin? Where did it start? What was the genesis of this? And we need to get answers on that. Now, the Attorney General has pledged to get answers on that. I hope to God he does. I want to play you, this is now the question of whether the Steele dossier is evidence of Russian disinformation. All right? Which would then, of course, prove that Hillary was, in fact, the real colluder, because the Clinton campaign, which then paid for the dossier, and then they pushed forward the DNC, and then they pushed forward with it. So take a listen now to cut number three.
Dossier. Mr. Steele, of course, is a former British intelligence officer hired by to do opposition research by the Hillary Clinton campaign on her political adversaries, including President Trump or candidate Trump at that time. How do we know that the Steele dossier is not itself evidence of Russian disinformation campaign, knowing what we know now that basically the allegations made in therein were secondhand, hearsay, or unverified? Can we state with confidence that the Steele dossier was not part of the Russian disinformation campaign?
No, I can't state that with confidence, and that is one of the areas that I'm reviewing. I'm concerned about it, and I don't think it's entirely speculative.
Now, we're going to get to the bottom of all this, I hope. The Attorney General was also asked about the origins of all this. Who started it? Why? When? All of this. Cut number two.
Shouldn't the special counsel have looked into the origins of the FBI's investigation into alleged collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia?
The origins of that narrative?
Yes.
I don't know if he viewed his charter that broadly, and I don't know whether he did or not. That's something that I am reviewing, and again, we'll look at whatever the special counsel has developed on that.
Yeah.
That's great news, by the way. The fact that he's looking into that, and I hope to God he does. And that's really the real reason why Democrats like Mazie Hirono, that moron from Hawaii, want him gone. Because if Barr is gone, they have a better chance then of having the IG, the Inspector General of the Justice Department, shut down the investigation into all this, and then maybe they can try to get away with it. That's really what this is all about, to try to get rid of Barr so they can hopefully shut down that investigation so we don't get the truth about how all this started. Now, the Attorney General did today, and he said he spoke to Mueller. And he said Mueller said he was not suggesting we had misinterpreted his report. This is a key point. The Attorney General of the United States of America, cut one.
On Thursday morning, I received, it probably was received at the department Wednesday night or evening, but on Thursday morning, I received a letter from Bob, the letter that's just been put into the record. And I called Bob and said, you know, what's the issue here? And I asked him if he was suggesting that the March 24th letter was inaccurate. And he said no, but that the press reporting had been inaccurate and that the press was reading too much into it. And I asked him, you know, specifically what his concern was. And he said that his concern focused on his explanation of why he did not reach a conclusion on obstruction. And he wanted more put out on that issue. He argued for putting out summaries of each volume, the executive summaries that had been written by his office, and if not that, then other material that focused on the issue of why he didn't reach the obstruction question. But he was very clear with me that he was not suggesting that we had misrepresented his report.
Very important to know. All right. Well, we're at the Citizens Bank Park. We're getting ready for the Phils to take on the Detroit Tigers tonight. Stadium's starting to fill up. Met some nice Zioli Army members who came by to say hello, which is always great to see. And we got to do this, Greg. Let's do it.
Let's do it, brother.
That's Joe. Hit the button, Joe.
Yeah, I'm
that's your cue, Joe, to hit the button.
He doesn't have it.
This is like a, it's like a, like Jerry's Kids.
Oh, Jerry's no. Kids? Oh, come on, Rich.
Go ahead. Forget it. We don't need the stinking music. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Stop the hammering.
Who won Twitter? Okay. I'm going to give it to Mark Adair. Mark Adair says, Rich, I find it ironic that the cheerleading story is from Crossing Broad.
Well done, Mark. Well done. It's actually our buddy Kevin Kincaid who did that story.
Kevin's a great
guy. Kevin is a great guy. And, of course, his lovely wife, Sarah, they're expecting a child soon. So it's going to be a girl. And hopefully she'll grow up to be a cheerleader in a male-free cheerleading world.
I found it. Want to hear it now?
No, I don't want to hear it now, Joe. No, no, we don't. No. Nobody wants to hear it now, Joe. No, no, no.
Better late than never.
Thank you, Dawn.
Oh, man. Yeah. Better late than never, Dawn. That's right.
Joe, you did a fantastic job.
Turned out I was in Dom's hotkeys, and that's why.
Oh,
I was
well, there you go. There you go. You're in Dom's hotkeys because the audience knows what the hell that means.
That sounds let me quote.
Hang on. Let me quote Mr. Peterman when he said to Elaine, "Here's to a job done."
Thank you, Rich.
We'll be back tomorrow with you live, of course, with lots to discuss. Mark Levin will have all the latest on the bar testimony, the Zioli show on Twitter at Rich Zioli. Thanks for listening. See you at 3 tomorrow.
Rich Zioli, 3 till 6. Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.